Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Potter's beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres about to play the Dodgers. Padres just got swept by the Cubs, and it was ugly yesterday. Ryan, I suppose that's where we're going to start, but, you know, where would you like to start?
I want to go big picture here, Kevin. Is this a bad team, or is this just a team that's playing bad? Like, to me, that's the question. Is this who they are, or is this a bad stretch?
I think
you could take up 20 minutes talking about that question.
I think you're onto something, because that is the question, right? Like, and I think very easy, and it may be true, that they're a bad team. It's very easy to say that based on more than half the season so far, the offense has been poor, or about half the season. And half the season, it's been good. So then we don't know which it is. More than half the season or thereabouts, the starting pitching has been poor. We know it's bad. So far, if I'm weighing things, bad team. They also have a winning record. So that kind of muddies it. Recency bias says this team's awful. Where do you stand?
I don't know. I'm torn. It's hard to watch a team lose by 20 and say that they're anything but bad. It's hard to watch a team turn Dansby Swanson into Hank Aaron, wind blowing out or not, and go, well, maybe they're not bad. Kevin, I remember being in Mexico City with you, and it was at the end of April. And the talk at the hotel, the talk a little bit at the ballpark was, there's no way they're as good as their record indicates, right? So I'm trying to keep that in my head too. When they were going good, we went, yeah, they're not as good as their record says. Maybe they're not as bad as the last 2 weeks or month says either. But man, I don't know. I'm stuck with this, and I think I texted you this morning. I think that they're almost compelled to make a move at some point here, even before the deadline. But what the hell is that move going to be? Like, I don't think they know whether they're buyers or sellers yet.
Right. They don't. And then what do you do? Do you try to get some stopgap? Because that's really all you're going to get right now.
Right.
Is a stopgap starting pitching. And let's just boil it down. The starting pitching's the problem. You talked about Dansby Swanson. Well, Manny Machado didn't throw him those pitches. Right. Like, I mean, the starting pitching, and then, you know, a couple relievers have gotten beat up too. But I mean, that's a tough place to pitch. So the starting pitching, that's where you would make your move to say, okay, because the truth is, over the last 3 weeks, and in particular the last 2 weeks, the offense is plenty good enough if the starting pitching wasn't horrible. That's just a fact. So that's hard to do, this whole thing of where there's half of the game, your pitcher's in charge. So, like, you know, and then there's half the game, the pitcher can't do anything. But there's all these guys that are in. So which one is letting you down? And by far, what's letting you down is the starting pitching.
Right.
And then it's, look, this team can't get it together because the starting pitching was okay. And obviously, we're leaving the bullpen out of the conversation because they're just fine. When the offense was horrible, the starting pitching was okay.
Right.
Like, they actually were. They were. And you could say, gosh, if the offense was just, like, they could have been over, and now we'd just be watching them down to like a, you know, 15 over. I don't care what their record is now, their starting pitching is going to doom them unless something magical happens in terms of additions, or I don't know, maybe Germán Márquez comes back. He really was hurt, man, but he's found it now. Like, but my, something has to change with the starting pitching.
Yeah, I mean, where's Johnny Brito? Where's Matt Waldron? I mean, when we talk about stopgaps, I go, and again, we talked about this on the last episode. It's not worth rehashing necessarily. I will give them the benefit of the doubt that they know something I don't. Right. I believe that they know something I don't.
Yeah.
And that there are going to be corresponding moves that maybe they don't want to make. But God, you look at Johnny Brito in AAA and go, well, maybe he's a stopgap. Maybe he's a guy who you bring him up, and if he can help write things, well, okay, you're a buyer. Cool. What if he comes up and is average and you're a seller? Well, shoot, he's going to take Walker Buehler's place in the rotation if the Padres sell Walker Buehler for parts. right? Like, I guess I don't see necessarily the risk in bringing up a guy like a Johnny Brito.
Well, right now you would have to do it and send somebody down. That's fine. Right. Fine to send down Kyle Hart or whatever, right? Like, but you got to bring Germán Márquez up too. Now, okay, so who are you sending down? Or look, none of these starting pitchers can go down. Because or you lose them, right? So like it's about an options game too. And your point is my point. I mean, unless you're just like, I don't know, unless you really truly think that these people don't know what they're doing, right, we can assume they're seeing the same thing we're seeing. They know they need to make their starting pitching better. If they're not bringing up Johnny Brito or Matt Waldron, they know something we don't know.
Right.
But I'm also saying that part of that is, where do they fit? Randy Vasquez is out of options. Matt Walker Buehler can't be optioned. Obviously, you're not sending down Michael King. Griffin Canning, you lose him. Giolito, you lose him. There's not a lot they can do right now until they find someone that they know when they put them out there, they're going to be better.
Well, maybe that's it. Is if you're going to bring Johnny Brito up, maybe you're bringing Johnny Brito up for the rest of the year. Right. Mm-hmm. Like maybe that's a decision you make after you decide to part ways with Germán Márquez. Maybe that's a move that you make after you trade Walker Buehler if they decide that they're sellers. I don't know. Look, we knew that this was going to be a rough 3-week stretch. Right. We did. You look at the records of the teams that they're playing. You just do. And, you know, they now get 4 with L.A., which is going to be probably a rough watch this weekend. But to me, the question is just larger is, Kevin, if you had to guess from a percentage standpoint, what's the percentage as of today that they're buyers? And what's the percentage that they're sellers at the deadline? What do you think?
Wow, that's a good one. And you have the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, the Blue Jays coming up, then the draft, which is at the All-Star break or right before it. It could come down to like the series out of that. Like Ryan, like they have an obligation to themselves, but to the fans, like to not punt on this season unless it absolutely makes the sense to do that, to make yourself better or not make yourself worse going forward. But like, what is the risk in selling? Like whether you, hey, fine, make Ethan Salas untouchable. I could argue that that should not be the case, but I can also argue that it should be the case that he's untouchable. Make him untouchable. What's the argument here, like, against going for it unless these next 2 weeks go horribly? Then there's virtually no argument to go for it, all right? Well, because at that point, Jackson Merrill ain't getting fixed enough, okay? I know. Manny Machado's not going to hit more than 220 or whatever, right? Like he's at 190 now. You're not. It's just, I don't get the idea of selling at this point, but I get the idea that you could convince me in 2 weeks that I don't get the idea of buying.
Right. I would argue here on this is number one, maybe they shouldn't sell because they may not have enough sellable pieces for this to be franchise changing. Right.
Oh, it's definitely not to be franchise changing.
I see this. I see right now that the best Padre any position is Mason Miller.
And that's where I just second guess myself on not franchise chasing or changing. So go ahead on that thought.
Mason Miller. I would argue to you that Mason Miller, that his stock has never been higher. It's much higher now, even than it was a year ago when the Padres traded for him. He's been better than he was with the A's, and he's been doing it against better competition at a higher level in a larger spotlight, right? Baseball knows more about Mason Miller today than they did a year ago. Okay. If you're not going to win any games in the second half of the season, or if you're winning one game a week or two or three, right, having the world's best closer doesn't get you a whole lot, right?
Except you have him for 3 more years, so go ahead.
Okay. Hear me out. The Padres existed for 20 years finding closers. Some way, somehow. They just have. I know that the game has changed. I know you have to throw super hard. I know. But to me, if you could get something similar to what you gave up for Mason Miller, right? If you could get a Leo DeVries type, I think you have to think about it. I think that if you could package a bad contract with Mason Miller, if you say, hey, Mason Miller and Xander Bogaerts, who's in? I think you have to pursue it. I also think that if you can get somebody to take Walker Buehler, you do it for whatever you can get as a, I mean, almost as a favor to him. Hey, there you go. I think that if you can get somebody to take Jake Cronenworth's salary, you do it. But that's the list, Kevin. Adrian Morahone, maybe he's on that list. That's the list of tradable pieces that this team has. Really?
Ty France, Gavin Sheets, but okay. I guess it depends on what your definition of tradable is. Your list probably stops at Mason Miller in terms of what should excite you. Now, here's the deal. I'm with you on a lot of those. Some of them are pie in the sky. And I think this is pie in the sky. I think, but I'm not putting down the idea. I'm just saying I don't think it gets done. You know what you're saying if you package a Xander Bogaerts with Mason Miller? Now, I'm saying you do it in a second because of the implications long-term of what being stuck with Xander Bogaerts' contract means. I love the trade. I do. I'm pretty sure I love the trade, and I don't know what's coming back, and I'm pretty sure I love the trade. Do you know what you're saying if you're AJ Preller, if you do that? You're saying, I screwed up. Even though, really, Peter Seidler was a huge part of that. You're basically like saying, man, we just made a great trade for our future because we screwed our future a few years ago.
And you're saying, come sign with the Padres. Maybe we'll quit on you, right? And again, it's still – look, this is still a perception thing. The San Diego Padres, I think, are a desirable place for free agents. In the case of Xander Bogaerts, they're paying Xander Bogaerts more money than any other team even thought about paying. But I do think you're right. I mean, to walk away from – I mean, what if they said Mason Miller and Xander Bogaerts to fill in the blank, the Cubs? But what if they said those two guys for a couple, you know, mid-tier prospects, right? Your fifth and sixth prospect. I think people in San Diego would revolt. I do. Do they have an obligation to their fans to go for it every year is the question I'm going to ask you, Kevin, and then we'll move on.
That's kind of my thought is that they do and that they feel that way because that's important to consider, right? Besides what we think and fans think. And by the way, the fans are going to be 60-40 or 40-60 on whether the sky is blue, you know, or, you know, whatever. So, yes, I believe they do. Until it gets to the point of stupidity, right?
Right.
Trading Mason Miller might be the smartest and the dumbest thing you could do. That's just all there is to it. Like, it might just be the absolute right move. By the way, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But let's say it gets to that point. It might be the smartest thing to do. And it's also just saying, we had a guy that could really help a winning team for a long time. And we've decided we're not a winning team. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean what we are going to perceive it to mean. They can then try to build and you would hopefully give AJ probably the benefit of the doubt that he'd be trying to find a way to make a winner right away for 2027, if there's a 27 season, 28, 29. But what you're saying in the moment is we don't need this guy. We don't need the best closer in the game. It's silly to have him.
Right. And again, Kevin, I grew up in the fire sale Padres days. I did. I was a Padre fan at a time when this happened every year. And by the way, it didn't matter if you were Tony Fernandez or Mike Adams. If you were a serviceable big leaguer, most years they were trying to trade you in July and August, right? They were. I will take off my sports editor hat and put on my Padre fan hat and say, awesome. It's great that they're not going to sell. It's great that they're trying to put the best product on the field every year for these fans. Because I think the fans deserve it. The fans pay a lot of money. It's a lot of $18 IPAs to watch a bad team. Okay. I'm great with that. But man, there is a Groundhog Day element to this team lately that I think leads people, even somewhat, I think, smartish people like myself, to go, you got to do something. Because this is hard to watch. And to me, they've become boring. Which is almost worse than being bad, right? Yeah. If you're bad, there's at least a bottom to it. Boring, I mean, this has been the last, let's say, month. It's been hard. It's been hard to watch.
It's been longer than that with interludes more recently. They did sweep the
Braves. Yeah.
They did win 3 out of 4 series. but it's been bad. This sucks because in 2018, if you had any sense at all, you were watching the prospects. Mm-hmm. Right from the start, you weren't like, damn it, lost a series to the Dodgers.
Right.
Like,
right.
Now there's expectations, and expectations are the enemy of happiness.
Yep. 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 Just like, in comparison is the thief of joy. So let's compare the Padres and the Dodgers here. It's a four-game series. Four-game series starting. It's not bad enough they have to play the Dodgers. They have to play four against the Dodgers at Chavez Ravine. 7-10, 7-10, 7-10, 40. Those are our start times here starting this weekend. Let's get into the pitching matchups because why not? The aforementioned Randy Vasquez, 6-6, 4.44 ERA. Much worse than those numbers would indicate, especially of late. Going up against tonight, Roky Sasaki, 3-5 with a 4.88 ERA. Sasaki did not look good at Petco Park last week. The Padres, in his first ever start against them, he walked five guys, allowed three runs in four innings. He has an 8.36 ERA in his last three starts. Randy Vasquez has a 7.34 ERA in his last seven appearances. To me, I think it comes down to a simple thing, Kevin. If Randy Vasquez can not get hit for homers, I think the Padres have a chance. He's found a lot of barrels in the last month or so. I think that's concerning.
Found a lot of barrels, hasn't showed the fortitude when men are on base that he's had before, has walked guys. The reason he's found barrels is then he, you know, when he's not finding the zone, then he throws it in the middle of the zone. By the way, I'm going to steal that line probably because do you realize how profound what you said is? How often, and I don't even know what Randy Vasquez's ERA is, but you said four something. How often is it that you would say, yeah, and that, you know, 4.65 ERA doesn't even tell the story. A lot of times it's the other way. The guy has a 4.65 ERA, but you know what? He had some games that just got away from him. He really, the rest of the time, has been pitching. No, like Randy's bottom the last month and a half has been a bad game. Mm-hmm. His last two have been, you don't belong in the big leagues. And I'm not saying that about Randy Vasquez. I'm just saying, like, it's unbelievable that Randy Vasquez is taking the mound tonight against the Dodgers after what happened last time. And by the way, the start before that.
Well, and there's a part of me that goes, why are you letting him do this? Well, the answer is, Kevin, because we're going to look at the rest of the starting pitching this weekend, and they're all like that. I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised if we're going to get a notification here soon that Ermon Marquez is up or Jared, Johnny Brito. And I forget when Brito pitched, but Marquez, they purposely limited his pitches so that he's available at the snap of a finger to come up and like provide bulk relief or something. But yeah, you go ahead. That why Vasquez is starting is going to be explained by,
who's the rest of the way. Look, I think this is appointment television on Friday. Michael King, as close to an ace as I suppose these Padres have, 3.5 ERA, 5-7 record. Michael King going up against a guy named Shohei Ohtani. Kevin, this is a matchup. I think it's compelling. King has two quality starts in his last seven starts, but he struggled against the Dodgers on Sunday, took the loss there. Going up against Ohtani, whose ERA has ballooned to 1.58 here in the last couple of weeks. Better than those numbers would say, Kevin. He's pitching on a season-high 8 days of rest. He's allowed two earned runs or fewer in 11 of his 13 starts this year. My goodness, this could be fun to watch.
It could. What if Michael King pitches like he has previously against the Dodgers? What if Michael King's on, which is, here's the sad part. You're right. He's as close to the ace as they have, and he's far from an ace. Like he is a really good pitcher who could rise to borderline ace. And when I say ace, I mean, there's no more than 10 to 12 aces in baseball at any given time. An ace is something that most teams don't have. So, but he is their number one pitcher. He is a fantastic pitcher. He just can't. He got his mechanics like completely out of whack and he just can't find it back. And he's maybe the worst guy for that to be the case of because his mechanics are extremely complicated. He's an incredible competitor. So generally speaking, even when he's not on, he's giving you 6-3, but He has not been able to do that. He completely lost it against the Dodgers. If you listen to them after the game, they were surprised because of how good he's been against them. Right. So this could be a really, really good matchup.
Right. Saturday, Griffin Canning with his one win as a Padre and ERA of 7. He's going to go up against Yoshinobu Yamamoto. If it wasn't for Shohei Ohtani, we'd be talking about this guy as a Cy Young candidate. 8-5, but with an ERA under 3, 2.67. He's had 6 quality starts in his last 7 outings.
You mean for the Dodgers, because Jacob Mizorowski has probably already won the award. But yes, we would be talking about Yamamoto as like their best pitcher. And he probably is like for guy to take the ball every 5 or 6 days, whatever the Dodgers are doing up there. I don't know. They have a 12-man rotation. What are they doing? But yeah, Yamamoto, when he's on and even when he's not, he's also a guy. He's got that quality. 5, 6, 7, where he gives you that and you know, somehow, oh, you look up and your team's still in the game, even though he's going, man, I stunk today.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. JP Sears on Sunday. Came back to earth a little bit in Chicago. going up against Emmett Sheehan, who you may remember from last week when he pitched against them. Again, if there's a guy you want to start against in this Dodgers rotation, I would say it's Emmett Sheehan. I would. He has an ERA of 5, 4-5, kind of just a guy. But JP Sears has an ERA of 6.9. And that's for all the same reasons I think Friday night is appointment television. Maybe Sunday afternoon's appointment television, too. That could be a 12-11 game. You never know.
Yeah. I was saying that I've been missing offense yesterday and the day before. I'm not so sure I did. Actually, the day before was kind of cool. 9-7, Padres came back a little bit. They stranded a lot of guys on base. It was like there was a lot of action to it. But yesterday, oh boy. Yeah, I'm not sure I could take a 12-11 game, but that would mean the Padres were hitting, and that'd be something new to write about. As you know, I'm very selfish. I judge a day on whether it was good or easy or whatever, if I could be creative. And this Padres team, as you've alluded to, has just been boring. And so, 12-11 would be cool.
That would be cool. Kevin, I put you on the spot at the end of every episode, and today is no different. Simple one. Go Cubs go, or I love LA. What's better?
Go Cubs go by far. First off, like I got no dog in this fight, but I'm just tired of the Dodgers. Like, give them the trophy and let everybody else play. And I realize that that's way too simple, and I also admire the hell out of what the Dodgers have done. But it's just freaking obnoxious. The Cubs, the fact that that song is so hokey and yet so cool. And if you don't think it's cool, you haven't been in Wrigley Field while it's happening. Mm-hmm. And in today's day and age, and that everyone, for the most part, stays there to sing this hokey song is absolutely phenomenal. And that it's in Wrigley Field. Like, I can see liking I Love LA. I can. I obviously. But go Cubs go. Ryan, and I know that you asked the question, and I know where you grew up, so I know what your answer is.
Yes, I agree with you. And I agree with you there. Here's how catchy it is. By the way, it is the San Diego Superchargers of baseball. It's that song. It's hokey as heck. But we were in Chicago for the playoffs last year, Kevin. The Padres season was over. Jose Iglesias had gone after an umpire. Everybody we're talking to has tears in their eyes. And I'm walking from the clubhouse to the interview room, whistling something. And it took me halfway down the walk to realize I'm whistling Go Cubs Go. Because Go Cubs Go is stuck in my friggin' head.
It like, is. How can it, yeah.
And now it will be stuck in your head for the rest of the day, Kevin, now that I have.
Well, I just heard it 3 times and walked through the crowd, because that's the thing at Wrigley Field, to get from the press box to the clubhouse, you have to walk through the crowd. Right. So it's always fun when they decided in the last inning and you got to, you know, there's no other place you'd rather do it because it's Wrigley Field, for goodness sake. Yeah. And these people are ecstatic. The key is to get down while they're still all in their seats. Do you understand this, Southern Californians, who I absolutely understand? And I grew up with a dad who we left in the 7th inning, even if the Beach Boys were playing afterward, like, because we were going to beat the traffic. Like, do you understand? Everybody stays in their seats until the song is over. Like, so if you can rush down, you actually can get to the Padres clubhouse before the throngs. And by the way, a ballpark that they've done a wonderful job renovating, but was built, you know, 100 years ago. So it's really narrow. I mean, it is a real pain in the butt to navigate. But man, it's just a fantastic scene.
Right. You access the Padres clubhouse by going essentially through a tunnel or a hallway that was initially built when like your average American was like 5'5". Like, I remember feeling very squeezed waiting to go into the Padres clubhouse there. Kevin, 4-game series, Padres Dodgers. I'm going to let you get to the ballpark 7:10 tonight, tomorrow, and Saturday, 4:20 p.m. NBC/Peacock game on Sunday. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.